Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the Kalamcast podcast. The Uyghurs are Turkic-speaking Muslims from the Central Asian region and are one of China's most persecuted Muslim minorities in the northwestern region. The government has taken a hardline approach towards Muslim minorities, especially the Uyghurs. They have installed sophisticated surveillance technology across the region and have arbitrarily arrested and imprisoned Muslim minorities. It is estimated around 1 million Uyghurs have been detained in what China calls vocational training centers. There is growing evidence of human rights violations inside the centers, as well as reports of death in custody and forced labor. I'm joined today by Brother Ali Usman, who's the president of the Uyghur Association of Victoria. He's a human rights activist and resides in the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne. And with me also online from Adelaide is Sister Mayasar Ablat, the deputy president of the East Turkestan Australian Association. And she's talking to us via Zoom. Welcome, Brother Alim, and welcome, Sister Mayasar.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Thank you very much for having me here today.
Assalamu alaikum, and thank you.
So we're here to talk about a very serious topic, and it's something, as we were briefly talking about before the actual recording, it's something which has touched our hearts in a very sad way, in the sense that we're hearing stories about our brothers and sisters in a different land, in a different community. They're undergoing a type of persecution, which is somewhat unknown to us, for those of us who are basically living here in Australia in a Western country, a Western society. Some of the things that are happening to them are just so unheard of for us. What is something that you could perhaps tell us for those of us who do not have a personal connection to China or the Uyghur community? What is it that you can actually tell us with regards to how bad the situation actually is?
Uyghurs, probably a lot of people, they don't know about our race. We are Turkic minority in Western China, and we called our homeland East Turkestan, and Chinese Communist regime called Xinjiang, which is a new territory. Actually, I have to talk about a little history, just make everyone understand a little bit. So what happened is we actually established our own independent country twice in history. Once 1933, it's called Islamic Republic of East Turkestan. Then after that, 1944, it's called Republic of East Turkestan. That's twice. And when it comes to 1949, arranged by a Communist Soviet Union and in exit to Chinese communist regime. At that time, when they do in exit our homeland, and they promised a lot of things, like in 10 years, once the communism political system rolled out in the country, then we can have our independence. It's just like now we're talking about Hong Kong situation. Basically, they promised one country, two political systems. Then after a year passed, then that promise is being denied. Anyone asking the Chinese communist regime about that honoring the promise has been arrested and prosecuted. So it's basically like the Chinese Communist regime now not honoring the one country, two systems to Hong Kong people. That's why people on the street.
Right.
So
right.
Since then, what was prosecutions going on now? Lately, started on 2015, and after this new chairman of Chinese Communist Party called Xi Jinping got power. So this sort of prosecution getting more harder and harder and harder. At the same time, this guy put forward his China dream. The China dream basically take the global stage as a major power, even replace United States of America. So to do that, because inside of China, because of Chinese communist regime's one policy, or one child policy, the population is aging. So that means there is not much labor. And they have a lot of equity in the country. So they have to use this equity beyond the borders to make more profit to the people of China. So this guy did put forward, probably you guys know, One Belt, One Road initiatives. So this initiative comes through our homeland, East Turkestan. That's the beginning point to Central Asia and Europe. So to do that, because of their policy towards our people, and in exit 1949, and didn't keep their promise, which is high autonomy. And a lot of our people offset with Chinese communist regime, and they resist their policy towards us. And so now comes to his RBI initiative. he has to stabilize this region. To do that now, they come up is because Chinese communist regime now economically very powerful. So they come up with this idea that to stabilize this region, they have to change whole Uyghur ethnic Turkic identity to make them more loyal to the Chinese communist regime. So it's basically, I put it this way. So it's arranged and abused marriage. If you abuse your partner again and again, and not respecting who they are and what they believe, if you keep abusing them, one day they're going to fight back. So they fight back and they say you are splitists and you are terrorists. And this reason, it's just like we talk about the abused relationship. So if you abuse your partner, one day they want to leave you. And now old people doesn't want to stay with the Chinese communist regime anymore because they are abusive. And they want to change who we are. We want to live as with dignity as who we are. We believe in Islam and it's our religion. And they try to change all that. So they put so many people, we're talking about more than 3 million people in concentration camps in today. Wow. And brainwashed. And they have to change their behavior, change their beliefs. Even they have to change what language they speak. So this is all because of this abusive government implementing the abusive policy on us. And it's I see it as abused relationship.
Right.
If you abuse your partner, one day they want to leave. And even because this is our homeland and you come into our homeland, if you abuse me, of course, we're going to resist. If you resist now, you're saying that we are splitists and we are terrorists. Right. And you lock up more than 3 million people in concentration camps and change their view, saying that we have to be loyal to the party, whatever the party do to us. That's basically it.
Yeah, Sister Mayasar, is there something you can add to what our brother has informed us?
Yes, pretty much what Brother Alam has said is the current situation of our people back in our homeland, East Turkestan. Since our homeland, East Turkestan, was invaded by the Chinese and the communist regime in 1949 and renamed Xinjiang, a new region. Since then, the oppression has been ongoing, specifically because of recent media attention in the region and also with the introduction of mass concentration camps, also called re-education camps, since 2014. The oppression and the torture of what's happening against the people of East Turkestan and the oilers has become what I believe and most of the people in the international community are saying as one of the worst humanitarian crisis in our 21st century. We said back when the Holocaust happened that it would never happen again. It's happening again right now, and the international community is looking on and pretty much doing nothing. And what makes it worse is that given that we have so much evidence with the current technologies, satellite imagery, reports, first-hand witnesses, recounts of what's happening within those camps, still no concrete action is being taken by the international community or leaders around the world. So this is a crisis that's just beyond belief at the moment. What's happening in East Turkestan is not just specific to those within those camps. And currently, the estimates are between 3 to 5 million within those camps being held, but also what's going on outside of those camps to the general population of East Turkestan, who are effectively living in an open-air prison. They're under constant surveillance. Their every step and every action is monitored by the state government. There's videos, a video recording at their doors to see who's coming in and out of their homes, who they speak to. They're not allowed. They've got government officials staying within their homes to report back who they're talking to, what they're eating, what they're saying within the privacy of their own residence, if they're praying, and so on. So what's happening in East Turkestan, when you actually tell people, because not many people know what's happening, it is quite unbelievable. But because it's happening to our people and we have family and friends who are affected by this, we know that what's happening needs to be told to the rest of the world so everyone becomes aware of what's happening and can stand up against the horrific human rights violations and abuses that is actually being carried out systematically by the Chinese Communist Party and actually being encouraged and enforced by them personally.
I think a lot of people, they don't they can't fathom this idea that people are being rounded up, in some cases imprisoned, some cases, you know, harmed, bodily harmed, due to practices that we would take for granted, such as praying five times a day, such as exhibiting some signs of Islamic behavior. I think this is something which is quite alarming for us as a community. And sadly, from my understanding, it's been going on for a number of years. We've heard stories of mosques being demolished, secretly being rebuilt. From what I understand, the community is somewhat resilient in that sense, in terms of their Islamic practices. Would I be correct in assuming this?
At the moment, from what I've been hearing, you can't openly practice Islam. That's completely forbidden. You're not allowed to pray even within your home. People are not allowed to attend the mosques. That policy was in existence many years ago, who was allowed to attend, and there was a certain age requirement in order for you to be able to attend the mosque to pray. But now, more recently, it's just across the board completely. There's no praying. There's no fasting. You're not allowed to wear hijab. It's completely forbidden. I've heard from sources that the hijab is completely banned. Anyone that travels into that area, you actually can't wear a headscarf. You have to take it off. And even eating like halal food, that's even being targeted. Like, you are not allowed to question where your meat is coming from and if it's being slaughtered according to the Islamic tradition. So in many ways, the complete way of the oil life has been banned. It started off as people praying and fasting, but now you're not allowed to openly practice your religion, even those within their homes, because they have people visiting from the government side to keep an eye on what they're doing within their homes and if they are reading Quran or if they are praying. So many people are too afraid. Most of them probably are just, if anything, just making dua to Allah within themselves internally and just hoping that this situation eases. But from what I've heard from people, you cannot practice. There is no openly practicing Islam at the moment.
Brother Alim, you spoke previously about re-education camps. What is the nature of these re-education camps? What actually goes on there?
According to a New York Times last month published 400, a bit more page of Chinese Communist regime's secret document, we called it How to Do Manual regarding to the concentration camps. People with traditional Muslim names, which is like Muhammad, Abdullah, and people with facial hair, like any Muslim man have. And even people with eating in the restaurant, people who ask if it's halal or not. And even people praise, doesn't matter, one time, once a day or five times a day. Even people who go to the mosque, subject to arrest and put it into the concentration camps. In the camps, basically, you have to denounce beliefs, your Muslim faith, and you have to eat pork, and they will offer you pork. If you don't eat pork, they will classify you as you're not loyal to the party.
Oh, wow.
And they will, according to that document, people who resist, the punishment has to be double. Clearly states on that document saying that people who resist teachings and all the indoctrination, if you resist, the punishment has to be swear and swear again. People in the concentration camps, the former detainees' testimony saying that in there, people subject to food and sleep deprivation. So you have to sleep when they tell you to sleep. And for example, in the cell, so small, and the people has to sleep by turns. A couple of people sleep a few hours and you have to wake up and another one sleep. And they will monitor you 24/7. You can't talk to each other. Even if you talk, you know, express your feelings, that's another punishment. So at the end, they ask you to sing Chinese Communist Party's songs and you have to pray the chairman Xi Jinping like a god, and you will worship him and saying that because of Chinese Communist Party and you having good life and all that indoctrination. And same time, the people who arrested to concentration camps, they have kids, you know, family, a father and mother in the camp, and their kids put into the Communist Party run orphanages like kindergarten, and they same brainwashing happening, and you know, they have to denounce the faith, and they have to eat pork, whatever they ask them to eat, because they little kids, and they have to learn Chinese Communist Party patriotic songs. So even the kids are suffering a result of this concentration camps.
It sounds very dystopian based on the description you're providing. Prior to this recording, we were talking about 1984, this novel, which was written by George Orwell. I see some parallels, unfortunately, between this and what the author was expressing in a fictional narrative. System ASR, I believe in order to sort of drive home for our listeners, the fact that what is taking place is very real. I understand you have some personal connections that have been affected in these regions that we're talking about.
Personally, my husband's family, my father-in-law and my brothers-in-law, and a total from what we've heard is approximately 45 members of his family have been taken in. We first heard, it was back in late 2017, I think December 2017, when my husband's younger brother, he told us to stop calling them and that the situation wasn't very good over there. So after that, not long after that, probably around March 2018, we got news that my father-in-law and my brothers-in-law had actually been taken into the camps. And we lost all contact through phone, internet. All communication was lost with them. After that, we have no way of finding out. We don't know whether the state of their health, where they are, how they are. But we did manage to get some news just recently. Unfortunately, it wasn't any good news for us. We heard that my father-in-law, who's 70 years of age, he's actually been sentenced to 7 years in prison. So unfortunately, that has impacted my family, and especially my husband, who is the eldest son. So he feels a sense of responsibility, and also it's left him feeling a bit hopeless, a sense of despair, some guilt that he's not actually able to protect them or do anything to help their situation. It has affected our family greatly because there's no communication, and it's not just our family. Like with most families in the diaspora, unfortunately, it's just not knowing what's happening to your loved ones. We have no way of communicating because a simple phone call could have them ending up being taken away. So obviously, we don't want that to happen to them. So there's a fear. We don't know, but also we can't call because it might result in our action actually putting them into those camps.
Of course, it sounds very frightening when you put it in those terms. Based on a previous discussion that we had briefly, I understand that your family has been placed into this stress simply for exhibiting signs of faith, basically. For any Muslim to sort of hear that, I think it's a very emotional thing to hear. There is persecution going on simply because one is wanting to exert or display something, even albeit small, related to their Islamic identity. We've heard suggestions that there is some spying taking place even in Western countries, such as the United States, such as Australia. Is there anything that you can add in relation to this?
Yes, the Chinese communist regime influence is even in Australia, it's in Western countries, any countries as we speak. For example, the Chinese students come to study in, just say, in Australia, and there is Chinese Student Association, union basically. And that union run by Chinese consulate in Australia. And any Chinese background people in Australia, they have all have their own association. So once you try to establish that association, and the Chinese communist regime has sort of, it's called United Front Work, and they always try to get in touch with you and influence you. The people, even...
How will that influence work?
It works, for example, the one student come to Australia to study, and there is already exist Chinese Student Union. And that organization run by Chinese communist regime.
Basically. So do they give them funding?
Or? Then they, when you come new, and they will ask you to join and or give you funding and to tell you to join or tell you to watch out what you speak, what you say regarding to Chinese communist regime
so
back home.
It's like you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Then if you don't listen to what they say, you have family back in China, you have parents or you have, you know,
right.
relatives. So if you don't listen to them, end up, they're going to pay the price.
Yeah.
So you have to listen to them. Even so, that means even you have your own freedom of speech. But because of you Chinese and because of you come from China to study, you have to censor what you have to say. For example, in Australian universities, comes to sensitive issues like Uyghur issues, or Tibetan issues, or Hong Kong issues, you have to stay with Chinese communist regime's opinion. So you have to support them. If you don't, publicly, if you don't support them, then probably when your family back home going to pay the price, or when you go back home, try to get the job, it's not going to happen. Mm.
Sister Maya, sir, I've read on a few articles that there are even some cases where some Uyghurs have been employed by the state to spy on other members of their community. Is there any accuracy in this type of statement?
Yes, I believe there is, especially given the current climate. I'm pretty sure that the Chinese communist officials will ensure that they have many of their spies working throughout all cities, throughout all nations, especially where we have active members of the Uyghur community who openly speak out against what's happening in East Turkestan, against the Uyghur people. When we are so vocal, it's natural that the government will have people spying on us. I personally haven't received any phone calls, but people within my community have told me that they do get phone calls and they do get harassed and intimidated, especially people who have direct links back home to family members. For example, students who are here studying, they will be told if you don't send back your ID and any other personal information, where they're staying, what they're doing, who they're speaking to, it could adversely affect your parents back home. In some cases, I've also heard people have been intimidated and harassed to actually return back to East Turkestan for fear of action being taken against their family and their parents. So the threat is very real. It's always existed. I've been quite active in the Uyghur community here in Adelaide from a very young age. And even back then, without the technology and the ease of communication that we have today, even when we had like gatherings or we organized a small protest or we did some sort of action to raise awareness of what's happening back in our homeland, people who were at those gatherings, photos, they actually ended up in the hands of officials over there. I've been back home to visit on a number of occasions. And each time I went back, I was actually questioned as to the whereabouts and in which city particular religious leaders within our community lived, whether I had any interaction with them. They questioned us even more once I got married and I returned back home with my husband because we became more involved in the East Turkestan Australian Association and the community here in Adelaide. Throughout our stay in our homeland, my husband was visited countless times. Every day they would come and they'd ask him, did you meet up with so-and-so? Do you mix with this person? How often do you see these people? What do they do now? What sort of position do they have there? Are they in government roles? Or do they work privately? What else are they doing? Stuff like that. So they kept, and we were followed while we were over there. So the harassment and intimidation happens within East Turkestan. And for those outside, we're not free from it either. So it's constant.
Brother Alim, do you think it's a situation where the Chinese government is actually digging itself a deeper hole by constantly committing such actions? Isn't it making things worse for itself? Yeah, I mean, what is the end game here? Why are they doing this? It's not practical.
So what happened is since the Chinese communist regime, basically China opened up to the whole world for business purposes, the Western countries especially start doing business with China. The same time, the Chinese Communist Party's narrative is using the economic privileges or leverage to gain economic benefit for the Chinese Communist Party only. Because of China is a big country, a lot of population, so labor force is very strong. That's as a result, they made a lot of money. But that money spent for two things. First of all, internal security. And second one is for military. So the strategy, 2018, the budget they spend for internal security is more than military. So that tells you how much money they spend to internal security to hold the people. And now all these 30 years, they try to influence other countries, even including democratic countries like us. So we see now in the universities, even in the parliament. The previous parliament members, most few of them, joined the Chinese-Australian Business Association. So the influences keep going until today. So basic reason is influence the government. Through government, they can influence the whole political system. Basically, they exporting the totalitarian political system to the whole world. We've seen in Hong Kong people fighting on the street. So for all countries, that's including Muslim countries, helping people like us, Uyghur people, is not charity, but self-defense. So once people of like Hong Kong people or us fell to Chinese communist regime, that means maybe next day it's come to even in countries like Australia because they're expanding, they're getting stronger and stronger.
Sister Maya, sir, in terms of something which our brother has briefly mentioned, in terms of the funding that they're putting towards this cause of theirs and getting stronger and stronger, it's surprising to note that the government is also using or implementing facial recognition technology in their cause. I would imagine that makes it even more dangerous for the community to exist. I mean, is it surprising in that sense that such extremes are being used or utilized for this particular cause?
I agree. I think it's very dangerous, but it's not surprising at all, given where is Turkestan, where our region is located. It's so central to Beijing's overall future plans for the Belt and Road project and to expand internationally their power and influence. I think what's the facial recognition and those sort of technology that the Chinese government is implementing in East Turkestan, it's very dangerous and it should be of concern to the international community because they're using high technology to basically be able to screen someone, and it actually differentiates whether the person that they're screening is Han Chinese or Uyghur. So straight away within a crowd, they can pick up who is Uyghur ethnically. And from that, they don't differentiate anything else. And then basically that's how they collect data. And as I was saying previously, because of where East Turkestan is located strategically and geographically, it's so important to the overall plan of Beijing and the Chinese Communist government in regards to their Belt and Road project.
What is so important about this Belt and Road project that the sister is referring to?
So this project basically China's Marshall Plan, which is try to take global stage and replace USA. Now anyone can replace, but as long as they respect human rights and the humanity. But in this case, we know Chinese communist regime. We've been under the repression for 70 years. If the countries like Chinese communist regime take center stage, there is no human rights, there is no freedom of religion, there is no democracy, there is no equality. For us as Australians, it's very important that, what do you say, we have to fight against this regime's repression all around the world. Diversity.
When you say fight, what does that mean? What can we do?
So basically, as a member of Muslim community, we can call our MPs or we can write an email and asking them about what's going on or what do we have to do. And at the moment, we are submitting, it's called Global Magnitsky Act, which is the punishing the human rights abusers. That's already happened in USA. So now we're submitting this act to pass through our parliament. So we get together with Tibetan community, Hong Kong community and Uyghurs, and Vietnamese community as well, to push this act pass through. If you guys can, you know, call your representative MPs or, you know, email them asking about, you know, this particular Global Magnitsky Act, that will be a big help.
So, sister, I think that's a good topic to touch upon as well. That is basically, what is it that we can actually do as a community?
Well, what we can do as a community, as an individual, we can all take action, whether it is participating in protests, rallies to show our solidarity and unity with our fellow Uyghurs and what's happening in East Turkestan, to raise awareness, to sign petitions, to write to your local MPs, to federal government members, to voice your concern, And like Brother Alam said, we are at the moment, we're in the process of making submissions to the Australian government to support an inquiry into whether Australia should have an act similar to the Global Magnitsky Act implemented here, so that the government can actually impose sanctions on Chinese officials and those visiting from overseas who have committed human rights violations and abuses. Because I think it's very important to note that what's happening in East Turkestan, it's affecting the Uyghurs there and other people living in that region. But more importantly, it's not just an issue that's affecting Uyghurs or Muslims, but as humanity as a whole. Because if you think about it, we have like 3 to 5 million people locked up in camps. And it's these people haven't actually committed any crimes. They're not guilty of anything. They're just locked up because on the suspicion that they might commit a crime. So if you have a government like China, who has so much global power, implementing this sort of policy on its citizens and on its people. That's why you have people in Hong Kong who are protesting, because they want their freedoms, they want their democracy, they want to be able to voice their beliefs and their oppositions to the government without fear of being locked away or facing torture. So what's happening in East Turkestan and what the people of Hong Kong are protesting about, and also in Tibet, this, if we don't take action now, this could happen in other countries. And once you lose basic fundamental human rights, I think that would be very sad for humanity as a whole.
What's troubling is that even online, due to the unfortunate link that Muslims have with terrorism that is going on in other countries, there are those who are attempting to make similar links with the persecuted Muslim minority in China. And that's quite unfortunate, because over here, when we talk about Islamophobia, it means something, but it means something incredibly different in places such as China. Brother Alim, I don't think people actually realize how small some of these actions are that you need to commit in order to go to a re-education camp. I don't think people realize, you know, how terrible these camps actually are in terms of what they do, what they teach, how they force you to behave, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's small things like people like Winter Hajj, for example, and people have obtained passport and subject to arrest and being put into the concentration camps. The religious freedom is, for us, it doesn't exist. People should be free to go to Hajj when they want to go. So even the people who went there now in the concentration camps. So that tells you everything. And they still keep the Chinese communist regime saying that people back in East Turkestan, Uyghurs, have religious freedom. That's the 100% lie. I mean, any country's tolerance of diversity, freedom, democracy, humanity, not repression, is the surest way to govern a vast territory with many peoples. Again and again, this all comes to one layer, Chinese communist regime.
Sister Ablett, even I remember viewing a documentary which talked about these re-education camps and some of the programs that they do inside, such as teaching people how to perform music, singing the national anthem, and all of these sorts of things. Even, you know, forcing people or teaching people how to do fake smiles. There's a huge level of artificiality which is associated to what is going on. And it goes back to what the actual end game of the government is. They're trying to push an agenda, but the world actually knows or is beginning to realize that there's something wrong, severely wrong, which is going on in this part of the world. Do you see the situation changing at all in the near future?
With the current situation, personally, I don't see it changing drastically. The thing with the Chinese government is what they do is once, like even with these concentration camps, so-called re-education camps, in the beginning, the Chinese government officials flat out denied their very existence. They kept on denying. Every time we brought up the topic, we said that the camps existed, that our family were being taken in, that we'd lost contact. The government flat out denied this. And then it wasn't until, which is the usual stance that the Chinese Communist Party take whenever something happens, until satellite imagery showed that these camps existed. From these images, you could clearly see that open spaces where nothing existed before, suddenly within like 6 to 12 months, you had massive buildings that were built with watchtowers and barbed wire fencing around it. So the government realized that they couldn't deny it anymore. And then by that time, you had actual witnesses coming forward who had come out of these camps or who had worked in these camps and they knew of the conditions. So then they sort of regrouped and they went into crisis control and they sort of came up with a transcript saying, which was officially, everyone was saying that it was re-education camps and people were taken into these centres to be re-educated so that they could become better citizens who could get jobs and contribute to the wider society. But I have a problem with that because most of our family members, even my husband's father, my father-in-law, he worked, who's 70 years of age, he's retired. He worked 40 years for the government loyally. And I don't know what kind of re-education you give to people like that. And we have doctors who have been taken in, entrepreneurs, scholars, religious leaders, you have everyone, academics, they were all taken in. What exactly, how are they being re-educated? So you can clearly see that it is to actually erase the Uyghur identity, to completely brainwash those people who have been taken in, to swear allegiance to the Communist Party and to the leader. So it wasn't to re-educate. You don't educate people by forcibly taking them into centres where they can't leave, they're not allowed to leave. As Brother Alam pointed out before, and with recent leaks from within the Chinese Communist Party themselves, official documents, over 403 pages, that outlined how these centres operated and the rules, and that there was to be absolutely no mercy shown to the detainees. So even with that, we can clearly see that the intent was not to re-educate these people. The mere existence of these documents, as it was stated by the director of Human Rights Watch, is an actionable piece of evidence that the international community needs to act upon now, because we have evidence straight from the Chinese Communist Party themselves, the top officials state clearly showing that these camps exist and how they operate and how they are meant to operate, and that top secrecy is supposed to be kept in regards to how the detainees are treated and how they must deny the very existence. So the evidence is clear. We just need to take action on this.
Brother Alim, Sister Mayasa raises a very interesting point, and that is it's very difficult to change something which people are denying. It's troubling for us to see certain Muslim leaders, such as the Pakistani leader, for example, to basically be unaware of the plight of the Uyghurs when he's asked about this situation. I would imagine that's even more the case for someone from your community.
Especially most of the Muslim countries, they not even speak out regarding what's happening to Uyghur people, but they sort of all supported the Chinese Communist regime's position on this concentration camps. That's because of the economic relationship Muslim countries with China. That's the playing main role on that one. So they don't want to upset basically Chinese Communist regime, because there is one Belt and Road initiatives going on, and Chinese Communist regime invests a lot of money into these Muslim countries. That's the main reason, I reckon. Secondly, all these Muslim leaders, they're only listening to the Chinese Communist regime's propaganda, only their narrative, and they don't want to listen to anything else. So that's the main reason. And as I say, this is defending Uyghur people is not charity. Again, that's self-defense. One day, if they come to the center stage, Chinese Communist regime, they will come to other other religious people. They will oppress just same as we oppressed by Chinese Communist regime. And secondly, another thing I want to mention is that now the global political atmosphere is changing towards Chinese Communist regime as a result of United States policy towards the China. It changed because the policy at the beginning was all based on the hope that if the Chinese people get richer and Chinese Communist regime probably goes towards to more freedom and democracy. USA's foreign policy based on that ideology and hope. But now we see it didn't happen. But turn around, the Chinese Communist regime wanted to replace USA. So that's why we see on the current trade war. The Western countries' foreign policy towards China is changing, and the political atmosphere is changing. So people start to know the Chinese Communist regime as who they are. So in this sense, I believe there will be change coming soon. And all the people suffering so long, it's not going to suffer anymore in the near future. All that IT technologies, it's coming through in other countries, especially from USA and Western countries. The company called Hikvision, which is IT company, they all face recognition products, most of them been sold to China. So that technology been used to facially recognize one race from another race. For example, from Han Chinese and to Uyghurs. So that technology...
It's a very scary application of technology.
Exactly. So
something from a sci-fi movie.
Exactly. So that's the technology is good, but you have to see what purpose
but the intents are not.
Used to. So if you depreciate from one race to another and put that particular race into concentration camps, the way they look, the way they dress, the way they talk, that's very scary. So that particular technology used to abuse human rights of the ordinary people. So this Global Magnitsky Act, one part of it, it's going to punish the companies who export the technology to dictatorship regimes like China. The one part is specifically will be used to that. And we see the USA government last month, I think, they named about 20 companies and 8 individuals based on that Magnitsky Act.
In addition to what our brother has informed us, do you have any thoughts on how news reports covering the Uyghurs are actually framed? Do you have any thoughts regarding how they're portrayed in the media or how certain articles are conveyed?
In regards to reporting on the situation in East Turkestan, alhamdulillah, it's improved a lot. For a while, we couldn't get any attention. I think it wasn't until people started to have access to the actual satellite images that were coming out of the region, which actually proved the existence of these camps. And then we had reports from specific experts in that field who stated that the images were real and how many people these buildings could accommodate. And then this sort of supported the reports that were coming out of East Turkestan in regards to people who had been detained in these centres, and also from our community who have been saying for many years that we had family members being taken in. We got more media coverage, alhamdulillah, which we are always grateful for, but we're not getting enough. And also because China is so powerful, they counteract this with their own propaganda videos, and which show, you know, that what they're doing in that region is for stability, it's against terrorism and against separatism, and they invest a lot of money into this, into the propaganda videos and the propaganda slogans. And then they have recently with reports showing activists on this side who have said that family members have been taken in and disappeared and we've lost contact. They've shown these family members who are supposedly safe at home and saying that they're not locked up and they're actually grateful to the government and they're all happy and living such a wonderful life. But you can tell from, like with all the reports that were done of the supervised visits to these camps, to some of the journalists that were allowed to go in to see firsthand how these centres were, how these re-education centres, as they call it, operated, you can very much tell it's all staged. There's no freedom. And when these people talk, you do have a government, many government officials standing right next to them, watching and listening to their every reply. So from body language, and just you can tell it's not free. No one is allowed to speak back freely and answer their own questions. If journalists go off and ask other questions that they're not allowed to, they will be told, no, you can't answer that. Or the person being interviewed will actually look to the officials to see if they can reply, or they say, oh, I'm not aware of this. So there's no freedom to actually reply. It's not to their own free will. It's very much all orchestrated. And so the government, the Chinese government, has always restricted reporting from that region. And I think that's what sets what's happening in East Turkestan to the Uyghur people apart from, like, say, for example, what's happening in Palestine or in Kashmir or other regions where our fellow Muslims are being oppressed and face the same situation. But with that region, you can actually travel there freely. Journalists are allowed to report and speak to people freely and hear from their own mouths what is actually happening, the reality of the situation. Whereas in our homeland, in East Turkestan, you cannot travel there freely. All journalists that go there with the intent to show what is happening to the people of East Turkestan, they can barely get close enough to just take photos or videos of the camps from quite a distance away, and they are stopped immediately from getting any closer. They can't go within those centres. They're not allowed to talk to anyone. Anyone they approach on the streets, if they are able to approach people, they don't talk to them. They'll be approached immediately by government officials and police officers who have followed them. There's like four or five cars that are constantly following these journalists. So their every move is monitored. They're told to turn off their cameras. So it's very much restricted. China is keeping a tight grip on what sort of information actually leaves East Turkestan. But we have been fortunate enough, alhamdulillah, to get bits and pieces of information trickling out. So this is helping us to get out what is happening in East Turkestan, to be able to tell the wider community and the international community what is happening. But we are very limited. For example, if China allowed it, allow us who are in Australia overseas to go back, let us visit our family members and see them for ourselves and ask them, are they okay? And if they are happy and they are free, as the Chinese officials are trying to make out, then why don't you open the borders, let us in and see for ourselves and show the whole world that the activists and the Uyghur community, that what we are saying is all false. It's so easy to put an end to this, but we know that that's not the case. That's why the Chinese government doesn't allow reporters to report freely, and they censor everything coming in and out of that region. So it's very difficult.
Having said all this, you know, even though China has a very tight grip on things, I've heard stories back from the days when I was an Islamic studies student that there is even some very small molecular type of Islamic learning or activism which still exists. Even, you know, there are people who are willing to take small risks here and there, such as teaching of the Quran, for example. It's done very secretly, very covertly. Does that still exist, or is that a misassumption?
Yes, I think probably in the previous few years before, especially after 2018, given the harsh clampdown, I would be very skeptical that there is any teachings, because there's a fear among the Uyghurs themselves. They don't know who they can trust. You're not allowed to speak to each other. Your communication is monitored. For example, they have the video surveillance seeing who is going in and out of your home. So they see that constantly. And then where you're allowed to travel, even that is limited. You can't travel from one city to another city freely. And the taxis that actually take these people from one place to another, the only taxis that are in operation are actually those endorsed by the officials. So you don't have the private and the individual contract taxis that you used to have. So every aspect is monitored, who you speak to, where you're going, what you're saying. And within the homes, they have government officials, which is still happening till today. I recently heard that they still have people who come out every so week, and they stay within the Uyghur homes for 3 to 4 days to see exactly how your daily life is running, what you are doing, what you are saying at home, what you are eating, who you're interacting with. So I find it very, very hard to believe that anyone, given that much scrutiny and constant ongoing surveillance, I don't think it would be possible for anyone to actually be able to teach the Quran to other people or preach about Islam. The best they can probably do is to just keep their faith within themselves and try not to show it openly, because that would just have them in more trouble and could have them end up back into these camps. Because recently they're saying that the camps have actually changed into 3 or 4 different styles. So they're actually going from the concentration camps where you are locked up and you're not allowed to go in and out freely, to like daily re-education centres. And I've also heard accounts of these where you attend every day from a certain time, like you go to work, you check in, you go there, you have your education, you sit there and you do the classes that you're told to do, and then you're sent home, where you go home to rest, and then you have to come back the next day. And then you have the labor camps where people are forced into labor. And then you also have the kids who are still in the state-run orphanages. So this oppression and these camps are like, they're subdivided into little things. Like you can call them re-education, concentration camps, daily re-education. But at the end of the day, you still have ordinary, normal citizens who are being stripped of their freedom, who are dictated what they can and can't do, who they can and can't speak to, what they eat, how they dress. Everything is under constant heavy scrutiny by the government. Yeah.
Brother Ali, a lot of what has been said in this last hour or so, or these last few minutes or so, is unfathomable. We can't imagine it, basically, in our current day situation, in terms of where we are, some of us, we can't imagine it. If there was something you can just say, just to wrap up, what would you say as a final message to those who are listening to everything that you've described and our sister has described for us?
Because of the Chinese Communist Party in China, it's like basically a religion, cult. You either believe in Chinese Communist Party, which is based on deception and lies, or you believe in your religion, which is Islam. So when you believe in Islam, you can't believe in deception and lies. So that's two things is, you know, it can't get together. So the Chinese Communist Party against the religion, they want to change people who believe in the religion to worship Chinese Communist Party. That's what they're doing at the moment. So for me, it's Allah, God, is symbol of truth, justice, and humanity. So anyone believe in the religion, when they see unjust, they have to speak out. That's the responsibility and obligation. If you don't speak out, that means you're not a true believer. So that's something I want to, especially Muslim brothers and sisters, you have to speak out. It's like if your, you know, one finger or your body hurts, or someone else, which Muslim, their body hurts, your body should hurt at the same time. You can't just saying that it's not happened to me, so it's, you know, going to go away. Maybe a couple of months, a couple of years. You know, I pretend I didn't see, I didn't listen. But now everyone is talking about it, and even we're talking about it here. So when you see all this injustice, you have to speak out, inshallah.
So Sister Mia, sir, do you have any final words?
Yes, I would say that, you know, alhamdulillah, we believe as Muslims that we don't give up on Allah. We know He is the best of planners, and with every hardship comes ease. So I just make a call to my fellow Muslim brothers and sisters and to everyone else who is listening to please support your fellow Uyghur brothers and sisters in East Turkestan. We need your help. The more people that are out there that are speaking about what's happening and what the Chinese communist regime is doing against the people of East Turkestan, the better. We need action, please. Even if you can attend our rallies, our protests, spread the word, find out more, educate yourself about what's happening to the Uyghurs and what's happening in East Turkestan. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your neighbors, get the word out there. Join us, come support our community. If you are in Adelaide, Sydney, Melbourne, Queensland, in all the cities of Australia, there is an Uyghur community. Reach out, talk to us, come join our events and our rallies. We need your support. As part of the Muslim Ummah, we have to help our brothers and sisters. So I'm calling all our brothers and sisters to please help us get the word out there, put pressure on your local government, on state, federal governments, sign our petitions, join our rallies, and inshallah, of course, make dua that Allah eases the suffering and the hardships faced by our brothers and sisters in East Turkestan. I mean, we can stand here and we talk about it, but to actually be there living it, like I personally have family members who are in those camps who are suffering, it's horrendous. We take so much for granted living in such a free and democratic society like Australia, where we don't have fear of someone coming and banging down your door and just taking you away because you are wearing hijab or you are praying or you are eating halal food. If we have a grievance against our government, we are allowed to go out and protest peacefully and state our views. But the people of East Turkestan, what's happening in that region, they have nowhere to go. They can't voice what is happening to them. They need you to be their voice. So please, please don't forget about what's happening in East Turkestan. get out there and please support us. Thank you.
So I think that's a good note to sort of end with. So Sister Mayasar and Brother Alim, I thank you for your participation. It's a very serious and somber topic that we have for today, but I nonetheless thank you for taking out the time to talk about this particular issue. And I can understand, given your family connections and personal connection to the plight of the Uyghurs, I can understand how difficult and troubling it is to perhaps even talk about this topic. Jazakallah khair to both of you.
Thank you very much, brother. May Allah reward you and the rest of the team who gave us this opportunity today. And I know it's just a small thing, but anything we can do, anything in the future, if you're planning any more similar interviews, recordings, whatever it is, we are more than ready and willing to participate, because it's really hard. We don't get this sort of opportunity much, and it's very hard for us because we can't do anything else. Basically, our hands are tied. So this is the least we can do, so that when we get in front of Allah and He asks, what did you do? We can say, at least this is what we did. We were able to raise our voice and ask for help and speak up. And then inshallah, when our families are freed and we are able to see them again, I make dua that we are all reunited with our family members, that we can at least tell them we didn't do nothing. We didn't sit back. We got out there and we put constant pressure and we were saying all this. So even if it's just a little bit, this is our contribution. And I thank you all very much for allowing us this opportunity.
Thank you very much, sister. And
thank you very much, brothers and sisters, having us here today. Make more awareness about what's happening to Uyghurs. I just want to finish with the quote from famous scientist Albert Einstein. The world will not be destroyed by those who do evil, but will be destroyed by those who watch them without doing anything.
Thank you very much. I think that's a beautiful quote to end with. And I thank you all for listening. This has been another Kalamcast podcast.